Hello, and welcome back to The Great Game, an Australian Mega Game podcast. I'm Patrick.
And I'm Jack.
And in this episode, I am talking to Jack and his co-conspirator, Zach, on their design and play of We Are Not Alone from 2019. Before we jump into that little news segment for Mega Games around the world, first up, excitingly, we're observing things sort of coming back to normalcy very, very slowly here in Australia. And down in Sydney, we've started talking about what that means for Mega Games and getting back out into the community for our games. So stay tuned for that as we get a little bit more solid information about what it's going to look like and whether or not we might be able to bring you something in 2020.
And in other news, we've seen the True North Mega Game Design Symposium finish up. Sadly, we weren't able to attend that one due to our playtest happening at the same time. But by all accounts, it was an awesome success. And as part of that, they've created a new server on Discord intended for female and non-binary mega gamers to share resources and experiences. So if you're interested in mega games and you fit that umbrella, please have a look in that. We'll include a link under the description.
Great. And speaking of the playtest that we ran just a couple of weeks ago, Dark and Stormy Night, that playtest did go well. We received a lot of positive feedback, a lot of learnings. Jack, did you want to talk about that?
So we had a lot of fantastic feedback. We had some 5-star reviews from people, which was great. And we had a lot of great critical feedback as well to learn from. A lot of interesting thoughts and stuff about asynchronous mega games and how those work. So from the player perspective, that's all great. From the moderator perspective, though, I was really surprised, being honest here, how actually stressful it was running an asynchronous mega game. The game we were running, Dark and Stormy Nights, it is very role-playing heavy, and that does require a lot from the moderators in terms of resolving those role-playing actions. And I was surprised to find out how, I guess, having that go off throughout the day was a pretty stressful experience for me, and I think for you, Patrick, as well. Is that right?
Yeah, it was very intense time pressures, even compared to a live mega game, I feel, for the amount of work that we needed to get done.
Absolutely. So from the player's perspective, I think we had a lot of awesome stuff and we could absolutely do that. But solving that problem of how to make this less stressful for the moderators, that's something I think we really need to solve before we go forward with it. Because, you know, I don't think we feel comfortable putting people under that kind of stress, to be honest with you. So we're going to go to an online mega game ourselves. We're signed up in a team for the Owl League, which will be happening fairly soon, and we'll be interviewing Stefan, who's running that mega game, in a future episode. So keep tuned for that. We're going to see what we can learn for that and keep going with it.
And so last bit of info from me before we jump into the episode, we are talking about We Are Not Alone today, which is a Brisbane design, and it's very much inspired by and a bit of an homage to the seminal mega game Watch the Skies, which we have talked about quite a bit. It's our go-to reference point for mega games, and it's arguably one of the starting points for the modern mega game era. So huge shout out to Watch the Skies and to Jim Wallman for designing it and bringing us this world of mega games, which we've all been enjoying ever since. With that said, let's get on with the episode. All right. Thanks, Jack. Thanks for joining us today for this episode and this interview. Before we got started, people sort of have a bit of an idea of Jack and my background and how we got into the hobby. But Zach, did you want to give us a bit of a quick intro to how you came across Mega Games and how you got involved in designing this one?
Hey, yeah, sure. Well, to begin with, I actually ended up playing in the first Watch the Skies held in Brisbane, Brisbane Mega Games, run by Jack. So I ended up being a part of the French team alongside some of my housemates, and it was really enjoyable. We had a bucket load of fun, and it was great. We ended up dressing up in horrible French costumes and talking in horrible French accent, and being delightfully awful. I then actually ended up playing Watch the Skies 2, also run by Jack, but this time as an alien, in which case I would like to pretend that the aliens won that particular game, and I'd like to pretend we make a good case for it, but whether or not we actually won a mega game is up to debate.
I think you did some pretty impressive stuff. There were two different teams of aliens against each other in this one, and your team was the one who blew up the other alien team's mothership and sent it into San Francisco, right?
Yeah. It was actually the introduction of, I think, one of Jack's ideas of spies and infiltrators, and yes, our alien team used that to great effect, sending alien motherships crashing down into Earth's atmosphere. It was good fun.
Yep, San Francisco.
Classic Watch the Skies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, there was a bit of a nod there. Yeah. After that, though, I actually ended up helping do some playtesting and a very, very minor design stuff for God Emperor, and then offered to help out with control for that, mostly because I enjoy doing that kind of stuff, and to have mega games go on, you kind of need to have control members, and I was interested enough to have more mega games, so I was willing to do control.
Yeah, perfect. And just quickly, do you have much of a background in this sort of gaming world prior to mega games?
I wouldn't have thought so. I'm an avid board gamer. I like playing board games, and I have more recently, after getting into mega games, dipped my toe into some board game design stuff with a local playtest group. But before that, it was just purely, my sheer interest and enjoyment of the previous mega games got me into this.
Oh, it's lovely to hear. Thanks,
Zach. Awesome. No, that's really good. That's sort of my background as well, where I, the board games kind of came second and the design stuff came second and the mega game addiction came first. But all right, well, we're here to talk about We Are Not Alone. And some people who are listening might already know that We Are Not Alone is, an evolution of sorts from Watch the Skies. And so it sounds like, Zach, you started with Watch the Skies, and Jack, you obviously ran things and jumped into designing some games based on the original concept. So I just wanted to start off by asking each of you, how you would describe We Are Not Alone in a single sentence or a pitch, and, what was the purpose of the game? How did it differ from Watch the Skies, and what was the design goal?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start off with that one. I guess the initial reason we began running it is because we had some people approach us who were interested in getting us to run a mega game. And initially we were like, well, let's just run Watch the Skies again. But the more I looked through the rule book, which we had already run a few times, the more I just felt like, I guess, the need to rip a lot of stuff out and start from scratch. And so, yeah, We Are Not Alone. It's a mega game of cosmic dread. It is a lot like Watch the Skies in that it's a simulation of world leaders coming into contact with some kind of big unknown threat. I think the big things we wanted to do, which were different to Watch the Skies, is number one, to streamline and simplify and unify a lot of the mechanics there, and number two, to make it a lot more modular, so that the idea is that the system can be used for a lot of different situations apart from just an alien invasion. And I guess number three, there were a lot of things we tweaked on the narrative side of things, which I'd have to go into a bit more detail, and I'm sure Zach could talk more about from the aliens. That's kind of my core goals, at least, when I was trying to push it forward.
Yeah, that's Jack has done a pretty good job of explaining it. I'll throw my hat in the ring for a single sentence description, though. I would probably call it a simulation mega game, where we put players in control of human nations across the world, and we watch as they try and work out what they would do if we were to find out that we were not alone, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Good description.
Yeah, perfect. You worked the name of the game in there, so that was a plus. Awesome. So, Jack, you actually touched on what I was going to ask next about regarding how Zach had a certain role in dealing with the aliens and the narrative there. Could you guys just give me a bit of a rundown of each of your roles through the design process, sort of how you contributed to the final product and how you just divided up sort of responsibilities throughout the design?
Sure. So I guess, was the initial person who was pushing it forward. And then me and Zach chatted a ton about a lot of different aspects of the design. And we ended up essentially dividing it up to where I was taking care of a lot more of the human side of the game, and Zach was taking care of a lot more of the unknown or alien side of the game. Would you say that's right, Zach?
Yeah, definitely. I would like to point out that both... So on the alien side of things, I was bouncing a lot of ideas and playtesting stuff or working things over with Jack. So to say that it was a clean split isn't quite right. I think there was definitely a lot of Jack was helping me out on my stuff and I was poking my nose into things that Jack was doing and seeing how...
Yeah, yeah. It was a very collaborative process. And obviously we weren't the only two people on the job either. There's a huge, huge amount of help from a lot of people. Which we'll mention later, I'm sure.
Yeah, awesome. Okay. So more or less, you are looking at a design for We're Not Alone that sort of mirrors Watch the Skies, which a lot of people know about and also we've talked about a lot in the previous episodes. But just for those unacquainted and also really to highlight some of the differences, did you want to just walk through some of the different jurisdictions or little mini games that were in We're Not Alone?
Yeah, that sounds good. I'll just walk through a couple of them and then kick it over to Zach if that's cool. So basically, in case anyone isn't aware of Watch the Skies, it is an alien simulation mega game where aliens come to Earth and there are a bunch of world leaders who are trying to grapple with that issue. It is split. We Are Not Alone, like Watch the Skies, is split up into the main areas of the science, the UN, a war map, and an espionage section. And the espionage bit is a little slightly different to the base rules of Watch the Skies. It wasn't necessarily its own role in the same way. And then for the aliens, we have a war map, the dreamscape, and spies as well, which I'll let Zach talk more about those. I guess I'll just say, without going into detail on each individual jurisdiction just yet, I'll just say that what we wanted to do in changing up a lot of the mechanics and a lot of the way these worked is to try to give the players a lot more agency in how they played out and a lot more, make it a lot more understandable, I suppose, for each player. And yes. So for the UN, for example, in the initial Watch the Skies, and I mentioned this when I've talked about Watch the Skies before, in the control section of the rules, it mentions, hey, listen, for the UN, they need to make these resolutions, but don't pay too much attention to what resolution they decide on. Just make sure that Terra goes down by 10 points, regardless of what they choose. And I did find a lot in running Watch the Skies a couple of times, the UN can feel... like really isolated, like they've got they're kind of doing their own thing, but it doesn't have a lot of impact on the rest of the game. So really pushing that thing where every part of the game impacts every other part of the game in a really meaty way, that's generally what we were trying to do. And yeah, sorry, I'll kick it over to Zach.
Yeah, no, Jack stole a little bit of my thunder there, and that was one of the key design points that I was working towards that I think Jack and I quickly came to a conclusion after Jack running a couple of versions of Watch the Skies and myself playing as both the humans and then the aliens in two different Watch the Skies, was that there was a large difference in the agency on certain parts of the game, and there was a lot of parts of the game that either felt extraneous or didn't feel like it influenced the main storyline or the narrative of how the game was going. And so that was part of the big design philosophy, I think, behind the reworking of Watch the Skies. But to jump back to your question of sorts is giving a brief, I guess, explanation of the different mini games of We Are Not Alone. I would like to preface this with a bit of a introduction, I guess, to the scenario of We Are Not Alone, if that's okay.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Yes.
Spoilers for anyone who might want to play it in future.
Yeah, if you want to play, flick ahead like 3 minutes.
Sure. The main reason, yeah, I hope it will become evident as to why I'm doing this. The key part of We Are Not Alone was that the human nations on Earth find out through some way, shape, or form that they are not alone on Earth. There's been a Lovecraftian-esque or cosmic horror-esque race living in the dreamscape, a location not quite on Earth, but instead in the dreams and thoughts of sentient animals on Earth. And so this race had been slumbering for millions of years and is finally starting to awaken now, which is why the aliens needed something to represent this, which is why we ended up working with something called the Dreamscape, which was a sort of a mirror of the world above, but in obviously more esoteric and dreamy sorts of fashions. So in terms of the mega game for that, it was actually quite different and unique for what we were working with compared to Watch the Skies. There was a lot of trying to work in how you would try and deal with a race that it lives or deals in dreams and thoughts rather than some sort of physical corporal form that you could directly interact with. And so the dreamscape for the aliens ended up being a lot of riddles and puzzles and trying to read between the lines of what was being said or done to work out what was actually going on.
Absolutely. So it was like a bit of a Lovecraftian mystery exploration puzzle solving minigame for the aliens there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The aliens themselves also, once the aliens, or in this case, the dreamers, woke up and started to feel around this new world with all these humans running around it, they started to have access to the rest of the game in that they could also go and influence events on the war map or turn up to the UN or send spies or infiltrators onto the world above to try and turn things to their whim. But in general, I think We Are Not Alone for the aliens, the key part was the dreamscape and how they launched from the dreamscape into the world above.
Yeah, right. That's really interesting. And that is actually, I mean, there are some parallels with the original Watch the Skies, but I think the biggest thing there is that it's so much more fleshed out, I think, that what the aliens are up to and how they're doing those things. That's not something I was actually aware of. I'd only had a quick sort of flick through the human side of things for We Are Not Alone. So probably before we move on, I might just ask, is that sort of that dreamscape, it seems like a pretty well-developed sort of side of the game. Is that something that you mentioned before, Jack, where you've tried to make a modular game and the dreamscape would not necessarily be part of another version of what We Are Not Alone, or is that a really an important part of the mechanical design?
No, that's exactly right. A part of making it modular is that I wanted to decouple it so that the humans had interesting enough stuff going on their own turf that they could just play a mega game that is just political conflict between human leaders, and that would be fun and satisfying by its own. So part of this game is that for the first part, in this particular module, right, for the dreamers, that would be one module, the aliens don't show up at first. There's no aliens, there's no UFOs on the war map, there's no shooting down aliens. The humans have a bunch of other stuff going on, and that gives us the freedom to make the aliens this more interesting kind of Lovecraftian thing in the background, doing stuff on the dreamscape, and then slowly coming through into our world and being kind of a weird surprise that there's this Lovecraftian cult old ones element exploding into the thing. And it feels like a disruption of the normal world, right? It feels more like a first contact sim, because you've had that little first part of the game where it is just about establishing the conflict between human nations. So other modules would not have that element. They'd have different interesting stuff going on.
I would like to jump in and say that I think for a module to be successful in this kind of scenario, it should be fairly well fleshed out. And it's going to be a challenge in... it's a challenge in designing stuff like this to have a module that can be both removed and replaced with a different module, but also mesh well with the mechanics for the rest of the game, so in this case the humans. But I think that's what's necessary to have something like this work well.
Definitely. Okay, well, that's really interesting, and it does sound very fleshed out compared to its predecessor. And I can see how that would change the state of the game, where a lot of people who've played Watch the Skies would know sort of off the bat there's a bit of a sort of what does the player know versus what does the character or the role that they're playing know as far as aliens go, because right off the bat there's UFOs on the map, and like you said, there's all these actions that are impacting the world, and people are kind of like, I kind of know about that, but I don't until it's been made public or we need to do research. Sounds like this is more on the nose, setting the precedent of what the world is like with political issues and tensions before the aliens show up. So that's a hot take.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, and absolutely, and obviously, Watch the Skies is a wonderful game. It's what really brought Mega Games into the consciousness. So I don't want to bag on it too much. Think it's I don't think it was initially something that was necessarily intended to be something that exploded as much as it has, right? So I don't want to be down on Watch the Skies at all. Yeah, that's definitely something we did notice. So the way that Watch the Skies works, this is getting into the war map mechanics a bit, is that in order for the humans to really do much at all, they need to be able to shoot down alien UFOs. And so they need to do that so that the generals have something to do, because the generals need to be able to shoot down UFOs to do much at all, right? And then the generals need to use the stuff they took from those destroyed UFOs, give that to the science player, and that gives the science player something to do. So it's like two of the people on the human team need fundamentally to have this situation where the humans are constantly shooting down UFOs from turn one, to really have stuff going on. And I wanted to really decouple that so that those players had their own stuff going on, even if aliens weren't there, or even if the aliens were in the shadows, which the Dreamers are a lot at the start. They're like a cult at the start, basically. And so basically, yeah, that's one of the things we focused on.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, it sounds really, really interesting and quite unique compared to what people might imagine when we say that it's based on Watch the Skies. And definitely, I have to echo your sentiments that we are by no means, shitting all over Watch the Skies. I think it's fair to say that the fact that this game is based on Watch the Skies, and the fact that we mention Watch the Skies as a sort of case study in every single episode to date, almost. I think it shows that, whenever we talk about it, it's quite endearing.
Absolutely.
There's no denying that it's an important part of the Mega Game world.
Yeah, it's the Dungeons and Dragons of Mega Games.
Sure. I like it. All right, so getting back to the design work that you guys did on the original run of We Are Not Alone, something that we've touched on in previous episodes, Jack, is playtesting. And I just wanted to ask you guys, before we get too much further, how much you went into playtesting with We Are Not Alone, because you've got these new mechanics that are based on, or at least inspired by original ones, but maybe they were kind of fresh out of the box on their own. So how did playtesting go for you guys? What did you do? Do you think you did enough of it?
Yeah, we did a good amount of playtesting, I think. I feel pretty okay with the amount of playtesting we did. It was particularly focused on the war map, and a bit on the dreamscape and the science elements. The the stuff with the UN is always much more difficult to play test because it's so much more roleplay based. You never really know what where it's going to go from there. But yeah, we did end up getting a good amount of playtesting done, usually with just a small group of five or six people on one individual scenario. One like on the war map, for example, we'd get six different people doing six different nations and testing that out and stuff like that. Yeah, and Zach was really leading up the Dreamscape and doing testing on that one.
Yeah, for playtesting on Dreamscape stuff, it was actually quite hard. And to be perfectly honest, I think if I was to do it again, I might try and finagle some way of playtesting it more. It's a bit difficult, I think, to playtest metagame modules or metagame mechanics, mostly because often they work in with a lot of other parts of the metagame as one. The metagame is a giant bunch of things put together and that works well as a whole, and trying to test individual mechanics within that without being able to directly get input from the other sides of the mega game can be quite hard.
Yeah, it's tough.
So for something like the war map, you can kind of simulate the other sides of the mega game or hand wave it away. For something like the UN, it's a little bit harder to hand wave away the ongoing situation or how your resolutions had effect. For the Dreamscape, it was quite hard to try and test how actions on the Dreamscape would affect the world above, or how what you did on the Dreamscape would influence human nations, because it ends up being quite, almost roleplay, in which you're running around trying to figure out what exactly is going on and how it influences the other teams and the other parts of the game. And you don't really know what the aliens will be doing until they do it. The other part of the Dreamscape, which was difficult to playtest, was the idea of riddles. And this is something which I would be doing finding a wider group of people to do some playtesting with if I was to do it again. I found that when I was trying to make, as I said earlier, one of the key parts of the Dreamscape was that you were trying to read between the lines as to what was going on and how what the aliens were doing or what was going on in the Dreamscape and how that influenced the world above. And while I tried to have both a wide range of things that you could read or try, or riddles to try and work out, and I got quite a fair number of people to test out to see whether the riddles made sense or whether the reading between the lines was, whether the expectation that players would get something out of reading between the lines, because if you've done any kind of roleplay things, the expectation that players solve puzzles or read between the lines is always a dangerous expectation to have.
Yeah.
And to be perfectly honest, we kind of fell into that, or I personally fell into that trap a bit, in that while I did some playtesting to try and make sure that we avoided that, in the end, there was definitely some cases where, in the end, there was some cases where some things went over some heads, and that was more on me than it was on the players, simply because we just weren't expecting certain interpretations or certain understandings or assumptions to come into play.
Yep. Yeah, and I think it's an easy trap to fall into, whether it's, you know, like you were saying, riddles or puzzles where people have to interpret what you mean or what's intended, or just downright sort of open freeform role play that you get with political mini games. It's a recurring theme that it's quite difficult to play test because not only is everyone different, but it's also really hard to simulate what people are feeling and thinking and the logic that they're following 4 hours into a 6 or 8 hour day of all this chaos.
Almost impossible. Almost impossible.
Yeah. It really is. So, I mean, we can do our best, but
yeah,
it's a challenge.
You're not wrong on that one. And I think, some of the feedback from that after the game was actually quite supportive, and a lot of people really enjoyed that particular part of the Dreamscape. However, I did notice when running it that there was definitely periods where things that I was expecting to be relatively easy to understand just went over people's heads.
Focusing in on the design stuff, designing specific mechanics, for example, that were sort of new to the game when you were taking it from the original inspiration of Watch the Skies. Before we moved on, I just wanted to ask you guys, were there anything, and I feel like we've kind of actually just answered this question, but were there any particularly risky or really out there or experimental mechanics that you brought to the table? And I feel like riddles and puzzles for sure. But was there anything else beyond those where you weren't quite sure about the mechanics even after testing, but you were really keen just to try some unique new thing?
I will jump in. Sorry, Jack.
Go for it.
Definitely think that, as we just said, the dreamscape and parts of the dreamscape were some of the more riskier sides of the stuff, at least the work that I worked on, which having riddles and puzzles is a very risky thing. We tried our best, and in general it worked pretty well, but that was definitely the riskiest side of things from the alien side.
I think for me, one of the things, I don't know how risky this was really, but it was on the war map. One of the things I wanted to do is have a sense of upgrading or growing stronger. I think that's something that I saw a lot of players come in with an expectation when playing Watch the Skies that that's what it would be all about. Because if you look at XCOM, which is a video game which clearly inspired Watch the Skies a lot or has a lot of similar concepts, it's all about upgrading and getting better troops and getting better weapons. And you start out like really scrappy and you can barely do anything, and then you manage to recover some alien technology and upgrade yourself and get a bit better. But the reality is Watch the Skies isn't really about that at all. And so I've had a lot of people come up to me and go, oh, okay, we've got one interceptor. How do we get another one? I'm like, well, it takes 6 turns. And they're like, what? It's already turn 7. we literally can't do it anymore. So we had kind of this, we planned out this almost, this plan of a technology, a slow gain of technology and getting more abilities and stuff. And I'd say that was the riskiest thing in terms of like how those abilities could interact or how people could use them or how they might bounce off each other. That was the thing I was most worried about, is that that could become overwhelming for people with so many players getting different stuff and different guns and that kind of stuff. But I think it ended up going okay. I think it ended up working pretty well in the game. There's still some stuff I'd like to streamline and clear up there, but I do think the feeling of, you know, working your way up to getting a giant mech and stuff like that was good.
Yeah, I'd like to kind of expand on that a bit, in that part of the human mechanics that I was unsure as to how it would end up working was how we ended up dealing with science. In the first Watch the Skies, there was a bit of a feel that the science part of the mega game was quite freeform, with not a huge amount of it ended up being the person who did the best at science was the person who stood up and gave the best speech and managed to convince people to agree with what they were saying, which for a lot of people was not very, didn't quite fit the gamer side of what science was meant to be about. It might fit sort of an academic side of what science is, but less of a, as part of a game, we'd like to do sciencey things and build giant mechs and research laser weapons or something along those lines. I know I'd actually like to sort of jump into the second attempt at Watch the Skies that I think Jack ran, ended up having a slightly different science process in which scientists could grab different technology cards and sort of progress up a technology tree by grabbing different prerequisites or different items from the war map or other parts of the game to try and progress up a tech tree. Unfortunately, that ended up being, for a lot of scientists, ended up being that they were acting as sort of glorified gophers, as in they would pick up items from the war map, or like the general would pass them items from the war map. They'd go to science control, say, we have these items, we'd like to research item X. They'd get item X and then send it back to the general on the war map. One of the biggest things that was tried to be working on for the science rework for We Are Not Alone, is to have something that both has the scientists be interactive and working together or against each other on science, but also fulfill that kind of gamer need to get bigger and better stuff through researching. And it ended up working out, as far as I can tell, pretty well. But going into it, I really wasn't sure if we were ticking all of those boxes, because there's a lot of boxes there to tick.
It was a very simple, it was one of the simplest parts of the game for sure, but I think it ended up working really well. It's basically, it was the way it worked is that you would unlock different bits of technology, which are cards. Research each technology you have, you need to get other people's help to research it, but you can only have a small amount of players researching each technology, and everyone who helps you out gets that particular upgrade. So if you get if you get mech suits, only the three people who help you to research mech suits are going to give their team the mech suits, right? So that, I think, did a lot of work. And then there were some small other mechanics to do with different things. But I think that was the core of it, which was very simple. But this, it turned it into a really nice political thing where you're like, well, all right, I'll trade you this, and if you help, let me help you with this research thing, and you do this. And there was a decent amount of communication and different alliances and different science symposiums going on where, you know, like it was very simple rules, but there was a lot of talking and communication and planning about things and different alliances. So I feel quite good about the science game. I would like to add like one extra bit of role-playing, one extra role-playing component in there or something like that.
No, that sounds good. And actually, it's a good segue. I was going to ask you guys about the work that's happened with the game since it was run. But first, we've kind of touched on it a bit. But how did the game go? You've run it once, I think, Jack. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It was hugely well received, which was really flattering. Wasn't expecting it to be as well received as it was, honestly, but it was great. Like the feedback we got was even better than God Emperor, honestly, although I don't know if I trust that really. But like, it's people really liked it. So on the day, we had a lot of awesome stuff happening. People used a nuke to blow up the UN. We had giant
You got to tell the story properly.
Well, okay. Oh, okay. So halfway through, the UN was not being very effective at doing much, and like was struggling to get resolutions passed. And the Chinese team got fed up with it and decided to use a nuke to blow up the UN. They fired the nuke at the UN. The UN was in the session at the time, so everyone there had like died and had to do a cabinet reshuffle, which is they needed to swap positions with their other team members. Certain select few people were told not to show up to the UN that day. But the funniest thing is that the Chinese team managed to get off scot-free for it, because the UK team had been given a message from the aliens saying, hey, we need unity, make sure everyone's unified. And after this nuke situation went off, they were like, oh no. So the UK team got up in front of everyone and said, actually, China was mind controlled by the aliens to blow up the UN, and it wasn't their fault at all. They were just victims in this. And so China never suffered any consequences, because everyone thought the aliens had done it. Poor aliens came off worse the wear for trying to enforce unity. It was great. Anyway, it was a fantastic game. It went really well. I think the basic mechanics I was really happy with working through. There's still stuff that we want to change up for sure. But yeah, I was really happy about it. How about you, Zach?
I think the game went quite well from what I could tell. The game went quite well. The feedback was above and beyond positive. We had a whole bunch of new players who had never played a Mega game before. I think like over half of the people playing had never done a Mega game before, and by all accounts, they all really enjoyed it, which I think is great news. Having a bunch of new players turn up and thoroughly enjoying it is great. We don't want to... It shows that there is such a wider reach for what we're kind of, what the Mega game can bring for people, that it's not just a core select group of people who find these things fun. It's a wide range of people who can really enjoy this.
Yeah, it's awesome. So it was like, 41% of people had played one of our events before, and 58% were new. Or something like that. Some kind of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question was just how the game went, right? Or was there...
Yeah. Well, I was also going to just jump in, because it sounds like everything went really well. You've got some great feedback. You've got some really good design work on the original mechanics that you're basing it off. But I was going to ask, you know, is there anything that didn't go down as expected that you thought, all right, we have to make sure that we patch this up a little bit if we do this again?
Definitely yes. Jack, did you want to... Because my stuff might take a bit, so...
Sure. There's a lot of... We have a lot of plans for changing and changing stuff around. I think I want... I guess there's a couple of big things for me. I'd really like to change up and simplify the combat system even more than it already was. I'd like to change up I am actually pretty excited about the changes we made to the news teams for Watch the Skies. One of the things we found previously is that the news team can feel a bit like it's as if they're just control people, you know what I mean? Because they're just kind of relaying the news that's happening. So we added two different news teams who are competing for subscribers. Each nation has subscribe tokens, which they can give to the news teams for favorable coverage almost. So you get this interesting conflict going on. I think that stuff worked really well, and that was really enjoyable for the news teams. But I want to push it a lot further and have the news have even more of an impact on how the game's going. I think that's the two big things, basically, for me that I'd mention it to start out with, but there is a lot of stuff we're chatting about.
I would actually like to, before I jump into my stuff, expand a bit on what Jack said, in that firstly, things were really quite well received, so these aren't mechanics or things that failed to work. These are things that we saw as designers going and watching our baby game be played and seeing things that we would like it to do better. Not things that we've gone, oh, this failed to work. The other thing I'd like to expand on from Jack was that some of the news teams, the news teams worked out quite well. There was a sense from some of the news teams that what they were doing wasn't having a large enough effect on the game state. You'd try and put out some breaking news and have the human players be really excited about something, whereas the human players would look at it and go, I either know about this or I didn't know about this, but it doesn't matter to me, or I simply don't care about this. This doesn't have any effect on stuff I'm doing now. Which feels a bit... it's a bit rough as a news team to be told that this doesn't matter to me, so I'm not interested. And it's... Yeah. It comes down to, I guess, the interplay between when you're on a really tight time schedule, what are you interested in? Stuff that I'm working on right now. If there's stuff that's not relevant to what I'm working on right now, am I interested in that information? Mm. And for a lot of players, the answer was no. And it's something that actually ends up tying into some of the alien mechanic stuff that I would like to have improved, is the sense of... what we can do to try and have things that aren't necessarily directly affecting the game state, whether it be through units on the board or resolutions in the UN, what can we do to make things that would normally make an influence or will normally have an impact on a realistic world stage, how do we make them have an impact on our human players or alien players or press teams within the game? And so it's something that we're working on to try and smooth that particular interaction. Apart from that, I would like to... One of the biggest issues that we found from the alien point of view was that the difference between the two alien teams that we had wasn't pronounced enough. There wasn't enough mechanical difference between the two teams for the two teams to realistically feel like they were different enough and doing different things. It really came into play where... to kind of peek behind the curtain a bit, one of the alien teams was meant to be sort of Lovecraftian-esque cultists that were worshipping some greater being and was willing to herald in its arrival onto the planet, where the other team was meant to be this authoritarian dictatorship regime sort of race that was going to try and to do anything it could to stop the arrival of this great being, at any cost, including things that weren't great for the humans. What ended up happening, though, was that both teams tried to play friendly with the humans, and so would smooth over the less happy parts of their backstories, and so we ended up having some very nice Jehovah Witness-esque figures that would knock on the door and ask, have you heard about the Great One?
Yeah, definitely.
Meanwhile, the other team was also trying to be friendly with the humans. And so one of the things I'd like to work on for future cases is to have there be a much larger difference between how the alien teams end up appearing to the humans, such that there is a greater difference in play styles and therefore a more interesting game, if that makes sense.
Definitely. And so the one of the reasons, which I'm sure Zach will talk about, that ended up being a bit of an issue is that the humans ended up really seeing this, although it was a bit more nuanced in the actual briefings and stuff, they ended up seeing it like, okay, these are the good guys and these are the bad guys. So we ended up with a situation, which was really, I mean, all the humans had a great time, but all the humans teamed up with this one alien team. And so, you know, basically it ended up in a situation where, you know, 9 out of 10 teams had a great time, but that one alien team who everyone turned against, it was a bit of a rough go for them because it just, you know, it was simplified down to this thing that they were the bad guys. And that was a bit unfortunate.
Yeah, it turned into, despite the fact that they were trying to be friendly to the humans for a large part of the game, in the end, the humans just saw, this team has a giant, greater old one thing that they're worshipping. That seems bad, so we want to stop that. And that was the kind of the crux of the matter, and that was the only thing that the humans really assessed when it came down to which aliens are the good guys or the bad guys. And so, yeah, part of the redesign, part of that would be to make it such that there's a greater difference between the alien teams. There's more that each team can do to make their own identity apparent, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always tricky when you've got vital sort of differentiating information that's in briefings. And one, like you said, players can just kind of go against it and play it out in a certain way so that they can get the means that they're after. And then other times it's outright ignored or forgotten about for whatever reasons. And it is important to try and make it sort of differentiate between teams.
Yeah, it's tough. And I think one of the reasons that that happens is because you're under such a time crunch in a mega game. You don't have as much space to make nuanced decisions as much, you know what I mean? So in a situation where you're like, I need to pick between these two options or where, you know, there's these two different alien teams, it is easy for it to condense down to, okay, good guys, bad guys, great, let's go, you know, and same for most decisions you make just because there's so much time pressure going on.
So it does sound like you guys have learned a lot from the first run and that you do have a lot of ambitious ideas about what you'd like to, I wouldn't say fix, but fine-tune for future runs. Have any of these things come to fruition yet? Like, have you play-tested them? Have you put pen to paper on new mechanics, or is it all conceptual?
We've put a lot of pen to paper, for sure. We haven't been able to playtest it as much in the current isolation situation.
Yeah.
We've done some stuff. We've got, I would say, everything except for the... we've got a lot of updates in there for everything except for the war map. That one is obviously a lot more difficult to playtest right now.
Yeah.
Apart from that situation, I am feeling really good about what we have updated so far. And, yeah, very excited to get back into it and to get making these other modules we have planned.
Yeah, not much more to add there in that playtesting is hard to do at the moment. We've got... There's a lot of Google Docs between Jack and myself and a couple of other people who have helped out on this and helped run the game with our thoughts, ideas, what we've kind of... narrowed it down. I mean, it's to kind of expand on a not quite your question that was asked, but we do need to be careful in that we're not redesigning the game from the game up again. It was received quite well. It did do quite well, both in feedback and how the game went on the day. So realistically, we're looking for some tweaks to make things run smoother rather than redesigning the game from the game up again, from the base up again.
Yeah, that's something I need to be concerned about, because I've got these concerns about the complexity of the war map and the different upgrade cards, but in the actual feedback forms, there was no play. We had an option. We said, "How was the complexity? Too simple, just right, or too complex?" And there were no players who put too complex, which. But I don't trust it. Like, you know, maybe I'm thinking out. But I did see some people on the day struggling with the war map. I don't know. Yeah, but anyway,
maybe it's the players who are wrong.
Maybe
no, it's the children that are wrong.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
maybe the struggle is part of the enjoyment of the war map.
Oh well, maybe
I'm only speculating. But Zach, I was just going to ask, actually, and this is absolutely no spoilers, but we did talk about the Dreamscape and how that's a big narrative and mechanical part of what makes the first run unique. In your redesign, are you guys already looking at, and I'm asking you, Zach, because you seem to be the alien expert, are you looking at alternatives to that narrative where it's a whole new sort of setup for the aliens, or are you reworking the Dreamscape?
So there's two sort of separate questions here, and that's for this particular module with the Dreamers, I am looking at reworking the Dreamscape to smooth over the issues that I saw. The narrative will be very similar, though, and so while the option is... While it is still possible to replay the game with the narrative involved, it's not like my rework... What I'm doing now is planning for a second run, if that makes sense. I think... While that is definitely possible, that's... I think the plan is at the moment is to smooth over any issues we had from this one and then move on to a second module such that we can pop out the Dreamer stuff and put in something else.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, I, for one, am keen to see what happens next, because I'm very keen to run We Are Not Alone, and I've heard so much about it at this point. The last thing I wanted to ask each of you was just about the designing process. Zach coming at it sort of fresh, having, you know, got a mega game under your belt, but still learning the ropes. And Jack, this was not your first mega game to design. So what, from the design perspective, not specific to We Are Not Alone, what did you learn through this process as far as designing a mega game goes? Are there any key little tips that you've got?
There's two main key learnings that I got from designing this. And like the first one is that a lot of the role play or freeform mechanics or themes don't always translate particularly well to mega games and players. They're under a lot of time pressure and a lot of things that are happening all at once, and it can be quite difficult for players to think about or deal with information that on a less or on a more relaxed situation, you might expect them to be able to deal with narratively. Whereas in a mega game, often these kinds of roleplay mechanics or roleplay themes get pushed to the side until they have the time to think about it, and then that often ends up not happening. So really, realistically, the idea for that is to try and tie in mechanics and goals and roleplay all together, such that players are rewarded for doing something towards their goals, whether it's playing roleplay or like thematically doing something, such that, yeah, they're rewarded for doing, for they're rewarded for playing the game in the way that the game's designed to be played, without trying to overflood them with a bunch of extra mechanics.
Nice.
The kind of second idea is a bit of a build on that, in which is there's a lot of, it's very tempting as a new designer, at least in my case, to go, "Ooh, this sounds cool. That sounds cool. This mechanic is awesome. Let's throw this on." These are all really good ideas, and then you've just got this giant pile of complexity that the players have to try and sort through to try and get at the underlying game itself. Realistically, mega games don't support a huge amount of mechanics that aren't necessarily meshed well together. And so it's one of the things that I ended up doing is you'd go through a period of designing and you'd have this, you'd put down ideas, you'd work it out, and then you'd have this bloated mess of a module that you look at and you have to try and trim it down to what actually makes that module work. That's hard to do. both because it's hard to cut things regardless, but it's also hard to cut things that you thought were good ideas in the first place.
Yeah, I agree with everything Zach said. I think, learning about it is very easy for people. I guess a lot of the things I learned were more logistical in nature, and maybe a bit bitty. For example, one of the things we asked in the feedback form is whether people wanted to be sent a physical rule book, and we found that most people didn't. That's interesting, but it's not, it's not a huge, huge thing. I think probably the biggest thing, exactly what Zach is saying, is that the role-playing side of stuff and the stuff in your briefing, I saw a lot of people begin to ignore it as the day went on. For example, the briefing would say that they cared about XYZ, and they would, slowly let that kind of slip by the wayside as other stuff went on and stopped focusing on it. And so I think that's something that's hard to know how to deal with, because at the end of the day, it's like you read your briefing for 10 minutes and then you play 6 hours of a game. That 10 minutes probably isn't going to stick in your mind much, right? But it's figuring out ways to integrate that role-playing stuff and integrate people's goals into the actual game itself and make it so that they want to do those things. That's, that's what I've been thinking about a bit, basically.
And just swinging back to the lessons learned kind of stuff, even if it is nitty gritty, like how people want rules, it's always fascinating to see how feedback comes in and how polarizing some of the feedback can be, or how unanimous some of it can be.
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys had pretty good feedback overall, but it's always, there's always something to learn in there.
We had a lot of feedback saying that the key highlight of the mega game was the UN getting nuked by China.
And I got to say, it's always China. It is always China in these Watch the Skies games.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, thank you both. I was going to ask you, are you going to be designing some mega games soon? When will we see them? I get the impression we've already answered that. I'm looking forward to seeing some of your work as soon as we're allowed to return to, the local town halls and bridge clubs. But any final words from either of you about the design process, or We're Not Alone, or anything to plug?
So I'll first of all, obviously, I want to thank everyone who helped so much on the design of the game. We had a huge amount of help from a lot of people on the team, and all of which is credited in the rulebook, so that'll have more details of everyone's name when we release that. But thanks so much to the entire Brisbane Mega Game control team, basically.
Yeah. Likewise, I'd like to echo Jack's thoughts there. There was definitely, at least from my end, design choices that I wholeheartedly stole ideas from people in our playtest group who suggested X or Y, and I was like, that sounds like a great idea. This idea is now mine. But yeah, apart from that, we're looking forward to running We Are Not Alone again, either with, yeah, hopefully we can do it multiple times.
Yeah, yep, definitely. Looking forward to seeing it. Looking forward to hopefully running it down here.
That would be good.
And thank you both for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Pat. And thanks so much for joining, Zach.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, no, it was great fun. Anytime.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find me at my website at ashtowngames.com or by the Brisbane Mega Game Facebook group.
As always, always keen to take questions and comments and get your feedback. You can reach me at hello@sydneymegagamers.com and also on the website and our Facebook group, Sydney Mega Gamers.
Excellent. And our next episode is going to be talking about online mega games and what mega games are going to look like in the future. Thanks again.